All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, November 18th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. Sorry about that. It is 47 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. So this has been a little bit of a different week. We've been on again, off again. That was actually a pre-recorded show from yesterday. I was still trying to be an assistant in getting some mechanical things fixed and working, but I am back in the saddle again. So where do we leave off? Monday this week, we titled the show China Next Gen Jobs Election, Watson AI, and The Last Invention. We had talked about a lot of different things that are going on right now with biofactories and the future of manufacturing, mad science gone mad in the laboratory with reprogrammable cells and bacteria, sheep shifting immune systems. And when I was away on Tuesday and Wednesday, I picked two very enlightening interviews, one of which we've heard before, the second we had not. The first one was one we had heard back in, I believe, March with Georgie Porgy Church on CRISPR technology and all the future things that synthetic biology is going to bring to the table and how amazing this is going to be. We'll be able to cure all disease and develop drugs and make synthetic life forms that can produce things such as living biofactories. We found out in our research that the Broad Institute, an institute that George Church is involved with, just got a, I think it was a $32 million grant for the next 5 years to create DNA biofactories. Very interesting. And as we've been following a lot of this technology, I know a lot of it sounds insane, but then we heard a lecture yesterday from Singularity University, I'm assuming, Singularity Lecture Series. By the way, Kurzweil, in this interview yesterday, mentioned Singularity University as being a collaboration between himself and Larry Page. Larry Page, if I am not mistaken, Larry Page of Google. And now Ray Kurzweil is a director of engineering. He even said this is his first job. It was his first boss ever. He's done a lot of things in his life, and his main thing was being a futuristic inventor. But Kurzweil said this is now his first boss. He is working with the machine Google that is in bed with the government. We've established that as well. Revolving door. Obama called all the big tech heads to the White House back a few years ago. They were all crying about how they were going to keep their stock prices up. All the while, the government was making it look like they had been collaborating and handing over surveillance data. So they had to play a CYA moment, tell them that, yes, you could tell all your shareholders and users that you will protect their privacy. But wink, it's all going to be done in the name of national security. We are going to make it a requirement now for you to retain data for a certain amount of time. So if we want to get in there and probe, we can, and we will absolve you of any and all responsibility and liability. And that's how they pulled them all into the game. They promised them funding from all these different federal agencies, and DARPA seems to be one of the biggest. But there's a lot of them, National Institute of Health as well, National Science Foundation. They are all helping finance with our own tax dollars this creation of a 21st century future that'll all be sold to us in the name of longevity and better health and an amazing new world to combat all of these huge problems we're having right now. All of this neglect that we have shown to our planet. All these generations we now are responsible for paying for. We now are going to see them utilize problem reaction solution in so many different facets, these disruptive technologies that are coming at us full frontal. And Kurzweil, the lecture yesterday was titled Accelerating Future, and this talks about that exponential law of returns that I've mentioned so many times. Kurzweil had discussed, right now our technology is, you know, thousands of times what it was, but 1 + 1 = 1, and then, I don't know, 2 + 2 = 4. And we're talking not a linear growth anymore, now an exponential growth. So as the technologists, the specialists, the government officials are all telling us, yes, the technology's coming. Look, let's watch National Geographic and see them do the first brain implant to get us all used to this. Let's watch the Cancer Center commercials about all these new amazing therapies that very well may cure you if you step right up and join a clinical trial. They're trying to groom us right now for what they're planning in the future. And Kurzweil, he talked about everything we talked about, including little nanobots in your blood, able to connect us to the internet of everything. And right now, we have hit that point where that linear slope starts to go exponentially upward. He said within the next 10 years, technology is going to be 100 times more powerful right now than what we have today. And in 20 years, with exponential math, we are looking at 1,000. Or did he say 1,000,000? I don't know. It was some big number. I was like, what? Times more powerful than we have today. And that is in just 20 years. So for anyone that is trying to tell us that the robots are coming to take all of our jobs, no, 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 that isn't really true. I just saw an article that talked about that. Don't let that scare you, Johnny. They are very, very incorrect. Ray Kurzweil is in the know. Ray Kurzweil is one of the people, I told you, he's the rotten cherry on top. Kurzweil, Google, DARPA, the unholy trinity. I called it the day it happened. Regina Duggan moved over and they gave Ray Kurzweil that job. I was like, oh, no. Because that was the trifecta. So as we're talking about all this, I promised on Monday, we actually ended the show with a story. It was titled 10 Ludicrously Advanced Technologies That We Can Expect by the Year 2100. And when, after we now assess what an actual accelerating future and a law of exponential returns means, I think the year 2100 is actually way further out there than it needs to be. I'm going to say just by 2050, let's say 30 years from now, 20 years from now, we're 1,000 or 1,000,000 times more powerful. What are we going to be 30 years from now? 30 years from now is 2050, guys. I think our world is going to be a completely, completely different place. Predicting the future is hard. That's out of Gizmodo. It is nearly impossible to know what technological marvels await us in the next few years, let alone in the next 8 decades. Undaunted, we have put together a list of 10 super advanced technologies that should be around by the year 2100. Like I said, I'm going to call that probably 50 years earlier. Some of these technologies are rather out there, unless, of course, you've listened to the show. I think we've hit just about all these. But I, the author, am reasonably confident in making these predictions as radical as some of these items described here appear. Most, if not all, should be around by the turn of the 22nd century. The reason has to do with an innovation that doesn't appear on this list, and we're going to look at this in depth today again, artificial super intelligence. And as computer scientist I.J. Goode aptly pointed out in the 60s, and this is where the part of the title from Monday's show came from, the first ultra-intelligent machine is the last invention that man need ever make. Uh-oh, that's what that says to me. It's the old To Serve Man episode of The Twilight Zone. Once greater than human intelligence emerges in a machine, and Elon Musk has talked about this, a development that could happen as early as the 2050s, and I'm going to tell you what, I think 2050s is way out there. I'm going to say by 2030s we're going to have greater than human intelligence. I would say definitely by the 30s. All bets are off in terms of what is technically possible. Intelligent machines will replace humans as designers and engineers, and we've actually read stories about that out of IEEE. Full-blown intelligent designers and architects that don't require human intervention constructing the technologies out of our dreams, including some we had never even thought of. And they have been showing with IBM Watson, letting him loose in oncology. IBM Watson is able to draw things out, looking at all of the facts that a whole staff of seasoned oncologists never even thought of or saw. So I'm going to say it might even be sooner than the 2030s. Look out, Watson. Here are just 10 of those technologies in the next 80 years that could change virtually everything. Well, number one, brain-linked virtual reality. Now, we've talked about both of these, brain linking from National Geographic doing brain implants, make that kind of a normal thing. We've seen DARPA putting tons and tons of money into curing things such as PTSD and prosthetic limbs. I just saw one now that can touch and feel and wirelessly connect with a tiny little implant in the brain, maybe even behind the ear. And then all they have to do is think about it. And they can control their new robotic arm. I mean, this is all being done, of course, in the name of curing or being futuristic with potential prosthetics, let's say, for many different things. In the military, they have been tinkering with exoskeletons to make them stronger or faster on the battlefield, kind of like an Iron Man suit. And I was just telling my dad when I saw him last weekend that he had Iron Man on. It was on the movie channel. And I was like, Pops, they're actually making that. There was an Iron Man project out there for one of those suits. So as they're messing around with all this stuff, and it's all going to be climatically controlled, because remember we found out they're integrating bio-living factories, not only into clothing, but into building materials as well. And Intel had that processor that actually took biosensors for the wearer of the clothing with those sensors in the processor, and the clothing itself could react to whether or not you were anxious or whether or not you felt comfortable and protect the wearer. I mean, this is not too far out there. We've discussed also 5G and millimeter wave, terabit a second wireless that is going to be coming here very shortly. Skybender projects from Google, Facebook. We have this whole, I just saw yesterday, we had seen at one point for the new drone, autonomous drone network, they were going to have to develop a new air traffic control system. And Verizon had been working with NASA as well as Google and other big tech titans to help build a grid in the sky so they could track where everything is and not have collisions. Well, I just saw the other day, AT&T is now partnered as well to build this new drone autonomous network. But as part of all this, this Internet of Everything that is coming, they are rolling out this 5G that's going to be this Internet of Everything connectivity, allow us to do cloud on the fly. At some point in the future, not only are all the robots that are going to be taking all of our jobs connected to this cloud, but they, including Kurzweil, have discussed groupthink, have discussed having the ability to be augmented and connected, little chip somewhere, so you can access all that amazing data without doing anything more than thinking. Well, this virtual reality now as well, Facebook, Microsoft HoloLens, whether it be augmented or virtual, are coming out at the very same time as this high-speed connectivity is getting ready to roll out. They will give you full immersive HD experiences as if you were really there. There are companies out there that are working on high-speed video conferencing and virtual reality as well. And we read a story way, way back about engineering teams, being able to come together and have a blueprint laid out in front of them, all being in disparate locations, but in the same virtual reality meeting room. And that is not in the not-too-distant future. I mean, they're saying this is by 2100, but I see this happening right now in the back end. You know, remember where I came from? That engineering world is still out there. We were always 10 or 15 years before what hit the consumer market. It was being developed and tested and rolled out to different segments. You know, maybe not consumer, but there's like 5-7 other segments of business out there where things are being utilized. So anyway, let me get through these because there's like 10 of them. We're only on number one. Number one, brain-linked virtual reality. Wearable VR-enabled devices like Oculus Rift are all fine and well, and no matter how sophisticated these sorts of gadgets become, a true sense of existing in an alternate reality will remain out of reach. And I disagree with that. I totally disagree with that. They've already been messing around with some tactile suits and stuff. I totally disagree with that. And the holodeck as well, you know, don't think that that's not coming, because it is, and we already have touchable holograms that we saw back about a year ago out of Japan. Anyway, back to the story. What's required is something a bit more invasive, and by the time we reach the 2100s, we'll have found a way to create a virtual reality experience that is indistinguishable from the real thing. Incredibly, these experiences will be fed directly to our brains, bypassing our normal sensory inputs to make it all the more believable. And you know, one of the other things I got to bring up, and we'll get there one of these days, but is looking at how the brain works on different frequencies and the ability to manipulate those. I talked to a friend last week or the week before, a friend I grew up with that I hadn't talked to in a really long time, and he was a musician for years, but he's real smart guy, thought about a lot of the same stuff. I mean, we grew up together, so I've been squawking about this shit for years, guys. But, you know, he ponders on some of the same deep consciousness things that I do and about what it really means and how we all connect and whatever. We started talking about the dopamine button and some of the ways that dopamine button is being manipulated, but some of the good things that dopamine button can do for us and different ways that dopamine button is elicited. And I'm going to tell you something. Even music can manipulate that dopamine button. Sound waves can manipulate that dopamine button. And if that dopamine button, that sensory perception, that addiction chemical can be accessed that easily, how difficult would it be to target other areas of the brain with different frequencies to manipulate, let's say, sensory perception? I don't know. I'm going to say that they may be able to do something even without implantables. Maybe that's 2100. But the implantable thing, I think they're pretty on top of already. They're pretty far down the line. All the things we sense on a regular basis, whether it be the smell of your tacos or the glaring glow of your computer screen, are routed to your brain. And as Morpheus put it so eloquently in The Matrix, what is real? If you're talking about what you can feel and what you can smell and what you can taste and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain. Ding, 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 ding. And hey, then they invoke Ray Kurzweil, futurist Ray Kurzweil, the author of The Singularity Is Near, explained how this could come about in a Q&A in his book. Quote, I see this starting with, oh yes, our favorite Ray, nanobots in our bodies and our brains. And the nanobots will keep us healthy, provide us full immersion into virtual reality from within your central nervous system, provide us direct brain-to-brain communication over the internet, and otherwise greatly expand our human intelligence. Now that should give you chills, because they have built little nanobots to go into your blood and to go into your gut and to go into all different parts of your body. They have also been experimenting with manipulating that vagus nerve with different electrical pulses to be able to control different reactions inside the body. Guys, this is not science fiction anymore. This is what people are stepping right up for right now in the clinical trials. This is stuff that once had been considered unethical, There's a study here on ethics that comes up a little bit later we're going to look at. But now it is considered the norm, pushing us forward to allow our survival into the future and live forever. I mean, I just, let's connect. Let's connect to that internet, the hive mind, brain to brain, and keep us healthy. Of course, that was the first thing he said. But keep in mind, and this is still Ray, that non-biological intelligence is doubling in capacity each year, whereas our biological intelligence is essentially fixed in capacity. As we get to the 2030s, though, the non-biological portion of our intelligence will predominate. So there you go. He called it 2030 as well. We will actually be predominantly non-biologically intelligent by 2030. And I would definitely have to agree with that. That's, you know, how long? 14 years from now. That's a pretty huge span of time in the name of how technology is exponentially increasing. But they say he's a little bit over-optimistic, but his concepts are sound. We're finding new ways, and we've talked about this many times as well. Ultrasound will do it. We are finding new ways of breaching the blood-brain barrier. Ding, and that's what we've talked about. Once they breach that blood-brain barrier, those things can get inside. And then they can do whatever they want. So we are finding new ways of breaching that blood-brain barrier and creating microscopic machines. And we've looked at many different types of microscopic machines that can travel around inside of the body. And just as importantly, we are creating a detailed map of the brain. Yep, talked about that also many, many times. It is the Brain Initiative, inked on by Obama as well, global initiative, including the areas of the brain responsible for processing incoming sensory information. Ding, ding. And I think we actually have a story on that later, too. Once implanted in the brain, Kurzweil's nanobots will locate the brain's various sensory inputs and then shut them down. What? Oh my, disrupting the electrical signals collected by the retina and the ear, etc., making the person completely unaware of their actual surroundings. And it would be the perfect sensory deprivation chamber. You know, I was thinking of that earlier in that Scanners movie. That's exactly what they did. Sensory deprivation. And in place of then these signals that they shut down, the nanobots, fed by wireless transmissions, would replace those missing signals, feeding the brain's cortical regions with artificial senses, an entirely new subjective experience. Oh my God! To the person, it would feel like they've been transported to another world. Wow, this is way worse, way, way, way worse than I actually ever envisioned. So they can literally, in the not-too-distant future, remember, they've already started with part of this brain project, mapping areas responsible for sensory input. Shut them down. Turn you off. Bzzup. Bye-bye, Johnny. You're going to go to Mars. And literally, you could be on Mars. Like, how crazy. And if they're connecting you via wireless transmission, why couldn't you just have some sort of virtual reality conference bridge that's like a Stargate address or something, you know, kind of like that type of thing. Bazing! You guys all show up at the IP address for Mars, the Intergalactic Protocol IP. Hit the conference bridge and you guys are all there. Everyone will have their own phone number so they could have their own profile, their own personality. This is just insane. And yeah, I don't know. That might be 2100-ish. But I think the actual implantation, the nanorobotics, all that is going to be way, way before 2100. All right, number two. This one freaked me right out, because I've seen this in science fiction movies before. Utility fog. Yes, utility fog. F-O-G, fog. Devised by nanotech pioneer J. Storrs Hall. Utility fogs are what? Oh, yes, your worst nightmare. Swarms of nanobots or foglets that can take the shape of virtually any object and then change its shape on the fly. Now, if there was ever anything that was DARPA shape-shifting, I would say this would be it. Storrs came up with the idea when trying to imagine a futuristic seatbelt, but instead of static straps and inflatable airbags, he imagined an intelligent cloud of interconnected snowflake-like foglets capable of morphing along with the movements of anything around it, including the passengers of the car. Utility fogs defy the imagination in terms of the technological sophistication required. Each foglet would measure just 10 microns across, roughly the same size as a human cell, and be equipped with a tiny, rudimentary onboard computer to control its actions, which would be controlled externally by an artificially intelligent system. Yeah, big Skynet will be controlling this utility fog that surrounds us everywhere. And a dozen telescopic arms that extrude outwards in the shape of a dodecahedron. And then when two of the foglets link up, they would form a circuit allowing for the distribution of power and communications throughout the entire utility fog network. These foglets wouldn't be capable of floating, but would instead form a lattice structure called an octet truss, which is holding hands in all 12 directions. A utility fog would work like programmable matter. Ding, that's what we've been talking about with DARPA. Capable of moving around, enveloping, and even transporting, what? An object or a person. So this fog could like swoop down, it could envelop you and then take you away. Oh my goodness. There will be nowhere to run or nowhere to hide, Johnny. More radically, utility fogs could be used to create a virtual world around a person. Oh no, I'm in Kansas. And even host a person who has uploaded themselves into this nano-infused cloud similar to the foglets. Similar to the foglet beings in Warren Ellis's Transmetropolitan, which that sounds like it would be an interesting book. So someone could upload themselves into this nano-infused cloud holodeck or something. It's just crazy. So, I don't know. We've gotten about halfway through the show. Maybe we save a couple of these for another day. Here, let's go to number 4. There's also mind uploading. We've talked about this many times. That's another wet dream of Kurzweil's. Mind uploading. By the turn of the 22nd century, and I'm going to tell you right now, don't do it. It's a trap. Don't let them tell you you can live forever because you'll be trapped forever. And then little Johnny on the ground will be able to push the button at Christmas time and download Nana into an avatar anytime he sees fit. You will be trapped. Don't go there. By the turn of the 22nd century, many people will have opted for a purely digital existence, one free from all biological constraints. And they're going to tell you that this is going to be able to allow you to live in the land of light and the land of knowledge. No, that is the land of dark, the land of control. You will not have freedom in that space. And even though they will dangle that carrot and tell you you will be, what's the word, where you live forever, eternal, it's not going to happen. You will be eternally trapped. Called mind uploading or whole brain emulation, this will involve the meticulous copying of an existing biological brain. The scans would capture every cognitive detail down to the molecular level. And remember, they already got molecular scanners. And this will include your memories, and they also can read your mind. We've covered both of those. But this will include all your memories, your associations, and even your personality quirks. Futurists aren't entirely sure how mind uploading will happen. Well, hey, maybe to the nano utility fog we just saw. But a critical step will be made to make sure that the important parts of the brain are copied, particularly those tied to a person's sense of identity, namely the parahippocampus and the retrosplena cortex. This is the first time I've really seen those mentioned in literature. This could involve destructive copying. What? Where an existing brain is sliced. Oh my, don't do it. Or otherwise taken apart in order to record a person's brain state and memories. Well, I'm not signing up for that, Clyde. Not one little teeny tiny bit. Alternately, though, a sufficiently powerful brain scanner could be used to take a snapshot of a person's brain and then paste it into a computer capable of translating the information into a functioning mind. I'm going to do a third option here. You know, they've been talking about augmentation for a long time. And, you know, there are implantables, sure, but I'm telling you what, wireless isn't going to be that too far into the distant future. Being able to manipulate things and read and transfer data back and forth utilizing wireless abilities. So who's going to say that you won't have some sort of augmented zappity zap, or, you know, maybe it's in the vaccine. How many times have we suspected they've been putting shit in there? Same people creating all this technology, DARPA's shape-shifting immune system with little DNA blood nanobots. I mean, it's all one and the same technology now. So when you get that first protective, because it's the only way you're going to be able to live in this new environment once Pandora's box has been opened and that Typhoid Mary is let loose, everybody will have to have one, or you will instantly die breathing this atmosphere. I see that as happening. And that will connect you, and it will record everything about you, all of your biostatistics, your brainwaves, your thoughts, your everything, your personality from day number one. So when your biological body dies, all they have to do is pull all those little nanobots out or have it stream that data for your entire lifetime to a database somewhere. Then artificial intelligence runs an algorithm against, and bazing, there is your full recorded and backed up $29.95 a month, Johnny, to guarantee you immortality. You know, I see that as very possible, and I didn't even think about that. Brain slicing on a meat slicer is definitely not going to be the way of the future. I could guarantee you that one. Anyway, in order for an uploaded person to function normally, yeah, you probably have to pay some money there too. They would have to be equipped with a virtual body. All right, you got to buy an avatar then back here. And environment. An important scientific and philosophical question to ask is whether or not this represents a true transfer of consciousness and not just the mere copying of a person's brain. And what is more, it is not entirely clear if conscious self-awareness can be replicated in a digital substrate. Well, don't worry about that, because I just saw a story yesterday. Harvard scientists think that they have now pinpointed the physical source of consciousness in humans. Yeah, and don't think that that's not a part of this, because it absolutely is. Frighteningly, each upload could create a kind of zombie and not one of the skin jobs on Battlestar Galactica. that every time they died, they just re-downloaded themselves into a new body. And that would function like a pre-existing person, but in reality would be nothing more than a script-driven robot. And yeah, I mean, could you imagine? They could turn us all then, download us. Oh, sorry, version 1.0. We have now created a zombie robot. Sorry, Johnny, it didn't quite work out this time, but you stepped up for that clinical trial. So there would be no liability whatsoever. So I don't know. I don't know. Where do we go? Do we talk about consciousness? Do we talk about scientists? I think maybe we will. Where did I put it? So will uploading our brain patterns and personalities create zombie-like robots? Because they don't understand consciousness as being something different. Well, don't worry about it. Because as part of this brain initiative and the Human Connectome Project, Harvard scientists think they have pinpointed the physical source of consciousness. This is where awareness lives. November 8th, 2016, 10 days ago, scientists have struggled for millennia to understand human consciousness, the awareness of one's existence. And despite advances in neuroscience, we still don't really know where it comes from or how it arises. That's like trying to put together Frankenstein and zippity-zap him. Frankenstein, is he really alive? Or is he just a bunch of parts? And will he even come alive? You know, that's really what it comes down to. But researchers think that they might have finally figured out its physical origins after pinpointing a network of three specific regions in the brain that appear to be crucial to consciousness. This is a pretty huge deal for our understanding of what it means to be human. Yeah, and that's where that scares me a little bit. Because they want to understand what it means to be human so they can overtake humanity and make us better. Not because they're trying to keep us safe. And it could also help researchers find new treatments, of course, for patients in vegetative states. Yeah, just like injecting patients who are considered technically brain dead with brain stem cells. You know, they started that experiment a while ago. And I haven't seen any updates on that. We should check on that. Someone out there want a research project and let me know. For the very first time, we have found a connection between the brainstem region involved in arousal, ding, and regions involved in awareness. Two prerequisites for consciousness. And, well, guess where? Lead researcher Michael Fox came from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center at Harvard Medical School. A lot of the pieces of evidence all came together to point to this network playing a role in human consciousness. Consciousness is generally thought of being comprised of two critical components, arousal and awareness, and researchers had already shown that arousal is likely regulated by the brainstem, which is the portion that links up with the spinal cord, seeing as it regulates when we sleep and when we wake and our heart rate as well as our breathing. But awareness has been more elusive. Researchers have long thought that it resides somewhere in the cortex, the outer layer of the brain, but no one has been able to pinpoint where. Now, the Harvard team has identified not only the specific brainstem region linked to arousal, but also two cortex regions that all appear to work together to form our consciousness. To figure this out, the team analyzed 36 patients in hospital with brainstem lesions. 12 of them were in a coma, unconscious. 24 were defined as being conscious. And then researchers mapped their brainstems to figure out if there was one particular region that could explain why some patients had maintained consciousness despite their injuries, while others had become comatose. And what they found was one small area of the brainstem known as the rostral, dorsatral, pontine, tegmentum. that was significantly associated with a coma. 10 out of the 12 unconscious patients had damage in this area, while just 1 out of the 24 conscious patients did. And that's suggested in this tiny region of the brainstem. It is important for consciousness, but it is not the full story. To figure out which other parts of the brain were fully connected to this region, the team looked at the brain map, or the connectome of a healthy human brain, which shows all the different connections that we know of so far in our brains. And you can see connectome maps at the top of this story if you check it out later on in the notes. They identified two areas in the cortex that were linked up to the rostral, dorsolateral, pontine tegmentum, and were most likely to play a role in regulating our consciousness. One was the left ventral anterior insula, and the other was the pregenial anterior cingulate cortex. That's a mouthful. But of these regions, they have linked, in previous studies, linked them to arousal and awareness. This is the first time that they have been connected now to the brainstem. This is a pretty exciting first step, but researchers acknowledge that they now need to verify their findings across much larger groups of patients. Step right up. We got a phase 2 clinical trial coming in your future. In the meantime, the research will hopefully lead to new treatment options for patients in comas who might have otherwise had healthy brains but can't regain consciousness. I mean, it is pretty amazing, but I'm telling you, always a double-edged sword. If they can find out where the center of consciousness is, as they're doing all this other research in the brain and artificial intelligence and merging man and machine programmable cells, shape-shifting immune systems, nanobots in your blood, it's not going to be too long. UAVs everywhere, machines that can think and make decisions. Well, hey, don't worry, because as this is all going on, robots are going to take all the jobs out of CNBC. Forget Dream Team employees. Business leaders just want great technology. Ding, ding. More than 2/3 of executives said that technology will soon create greater value than actual employees, according to a new study. And this was November 17th, 2016. This came out yesterday. In a survey of 800 leaders of multi-million dollar global businesses, 67% said that they actually value technology over people when looking forward to the next 5 years, according to research from the Korn Ferry Institute, a consulting firm that specializes in hiring executives. And we're going to look at AI and hiring, too, in the not-too-distant future. While we often hear the frustration from CEOs that there is too much noise coming up to their level, they wish that they had stronger talent in reality, and their answers were pretty shocking in that they far more valued investment in technology and other things, and not so much investment around human capital. Ding, 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 ding. Nearly 2/3 also believe that in the next 5 years, technology will be their firm's greatest source of competitive advantage, according to August and September interviews of leaders across the globe. Guys, technology is just a $29.95 a month. You know, we used to be able to sell ourselves as having experience, and that's what made us worth more money, especially if you had a large talent pool at a company with people with huge amounts of experience, professional services, backgrounds, consulting capabilities, where you could look at any problem, one of those engineering minds, and you can come up with a solution that was phased and economical. That'll be good for any business or any entity looking to improve. But guys, that isn't going to happen anymore. You aren't going to need those engineers because you're going to have things such as Watson. Remember that Ginny, whatever her last name is, from IBM CEO, said within the next 5 years, Watson is going to be in everybody's lives on a daily basis. And she was talking about doing online stuff and whatever. I mean, it's coming, people. And this is 5 years, these guys are saying as well. CEOs also ranked products and services, brands, and real estate as more important than assets, more important assets than workforce, which seems to be at the bottom. Korn Ferry estimates that human capital represents more than twice the potential value of physical capital in the global economy, especially as more major companies become services focused. What I am really finding is that customers that invest in talent in new and exciting ways are actually seeing tremendous returns, and that is automation, robotics, and artificial intelligence, and they have permeated business at an increasing rate. And yes, I'm going to say the law of exponential returns. And they are now central to the rise of some of America's wealthiest companies. Yes, all in bed with all of the dark takeover that is happening. Companies like Google and Facebook. But at the same time, consumers now are hesitant a little bit, and you should be, because little mousy, come get the cheese, all in the name of keeping you healthy, keeping you safe, and propelling us into the 21st century. It's not going to turn out the way you think. It absolutely is not. Consumers are hesitant to adopt the technology, according to a separate survey, 2,000 individuals by creative consultancy Lippincott. And while 81% of consumers were excited about the idea of an automated life, seven, and that's going to be sitting around being fed grapes by your little home UAV robot. 73% were scared to trust machines, and I would be one of those, according to the Lippincott survey. Don't get into that Google self-driving car. Why, little nine-year-old? Well, because they could drive you to the police station. Very good attitude to have, little girl. Guarnio said that as automation, robotics, and artificial intelligence replace jobs in the short term, workers will have to evolve and master new skills. Keeping jobs in the United States will also require more mindful regulation. Of course, that's what we need, is more regulation. It's poor small business and immigration, and it's not pretty. It's painful. It hurts. But ultimately, the jobs move up the value chain, not down the value chain. You guys better start learning to program robots. Become a robotic technician. I don't know. What does that mean? Korn Ferry initiated the study after noting that CEOs had a significant blind spot in the way that they value their workforce, seeing workers more like costs than benefits. And of course, with all those bennies they have to pay, you are a big fat cost, pension, sick time, vacation. You only can work 8 or 10 hours a day, but only 5 or 6 days a week. You are, you're holding back 24/7 production on demand. Says, quite frankly, the past 50-plus odd years of modern industry, while we pay people and we give them a salary and compensation, CEOs have seen that more as a cost is opposed to money well deployed. And part of the issue may be growing pressure from shareholders to invest in tangible assets like technology. Leaders also lack confidence in their ability to materially influence their employees' performance. So we don't really spend a tremendous amount of money and train or teach people on how to go lead. And as an ineffective leader, we can literally destroy human capital capacity of an organization. Yeah, but that doesn't happen with robots. You could be a shitty leader and the robots will still produce. Oh, my God. So we've seen Ross, IBM-fueled first artificially intelligent lawyer, was hired back in the beginning of this year. And now we see a company named Xero, spelled with an X, X-E-R-O. Xero predicts artificial intelligence will also transform accounting. This was from yesterday. Technological innovation is transforming the accounting profession, with artificial intelligence and machine learning set to have a big impact over the next few years. cloud-based accounting software. Ding! Everything's going to be in the cloud, paid for as a software as a service. Cloud-based accounting software, Xero. I bet they would probably be a pretty good investment if they are public. It was one of the first platforms to see the potential that the cloud held for accounting, and tips AI to be the next big development. AI, machine learning, and enhanced levels of automation will lower the cost of running a business, and rather than pulling accountants out of businesses, however, new approaches, legislations, and efficiencies will cement the position of accounting at the strategic heart of business rather than as a siloed function. Colin Timmis, Xero's SA head of accounting, comments, cloud accounting has already radically changed the role of an accountant. Accountants are increasingly performing the role of business consultants through accounting software that is connected to bank feeds and receipt scanning tools. They can access a real-time, ding, ding, live ledger, which they can use to inform advice and recommendations. Guys, this is pretty nuts. So real-time accounting, every receipt, digital currency, and we'll be able to give you real-time dashboards. You know exactly every penny that is being spent. AI and smart machine learning programs will be the next big thing, enabling automation to further disrupt the industry. Ding! Disruptive technology is coming full frontal from every direction. And the role of the accountant, from Siri to Amazon Echo and self-driving cars, AI has begun to enter our everyday lives. And the same will be true for accounting. There is a perception that AI will put people out of jobs, ding, ding. But this doesn't necessarily apply to accountants. Well, hoo-hoo-hoo, I would say, unless that accountant is old school, better start practicing your Xero software. I've never heard of them, so I'll have to check them out. Machine learning could advance high-integrity accounting. One of Xero's key areas of focus, which is when data is not touched by human hands at all. Coding work would become completely automated and data entry would be completely redundant. Accountants would therefore have more time to focus on the business and developing growth strategies. Xero's founder and CEO, Rod Drury, described eliminating coding as one of the biggest challenges that has ever happened to accounting. So there you go, guys. And not only is it coming to lawyers and accounting, but it is also coming to job recruiters. True artificial intelligence comes to recruiting. It's out of Yahoo Finance. Toronto-based IT software developer announced today the pilot program called Karen by Karen.ai, a cognitive recruiting chatbot that engages candidates throughout the full application process, matches those candidates to alternative positions, and provides screening support before, during, and after the recruiting process. Karen derives concepts and personality traits, ding, from candidates' resumes and cover letters. So they're going to psychologically assess you. And then they assess the level of engagement and gains a deeper insight through simple text chat conversation. They're going to diagnose you by your answers, people. This is coming. We talked about this with Tommy Insel moving from being the director of the National Institute of Health over to Google's Life Sciences division to work on cures for mental health, to be able to diagnose you by your voice and by some of your psychological patterns. Telling you, this is what they're doing. They're going to make a psychological profile on you just by interacting with an artificially intelligent chatbot. This conversation improves the candidate's experience of the recruitment process and represents the company brand. So we won't have to have an HR lady dealing with it. We only We'll have to. I don't know. Hold on here one second, because I think I did something. My bumper isn't going to play, and I'm not sure why it's sitting there and won't launch, but we'll find out. I want to finish the story. Is it going to play? Is it going to play? No, it's not. So, you know, give me one second. I'll just put it here and I'll do it manually. I'll just have to find it. So you'll get me to sing for a minute. And I've totally lost my train of thought. But, you know, I haven't stopped talking since the show started. All right, Jules' outro. I think it might be this one, maybe. And if it's not, then we'll have a different outro song. All right. Anyway, so we have Karen versus Karen by Karen AI. She's going to be interacting with you real time from start to finish while you apply for a job and psychologically profiling you and your resume. Karen can also follow up with candidates during and after the requisition and provide alternative options within the company for which they may be better suited. While automated solutions have existed in recruitment for nearly a decade, Karen takes these automation steps one step further because Karen can learn from her conversations that she has with candidates and then predict other positions for which they might be a match. This helps candidates avoid that infamous black hole created by traditional applicant tracking systems in the enterprise. And yeah, don't worry. Karen leverages a trained IBM Watson model. Ding, da, da, ding. And there we go. All right, guys. Make sure you stick around. You have an awesome Friday. Lonnie Clark is live up next, and I will catch up with you on Monday. Everybody, take care.
This is Ozzy.